Well, it's that time of the month again. We're only on the first, the second trading day after the end of the month. And the team at Corient Capital have put together the month in a nutshell. And as always, David Bacher of Corient Capital is with us to go through all of this information. David, I'm enjoying the way that we look at the month, and I've actually added a couple more graphs, courtesy of Kevin Lings from Stanlib, which I think will just elaborate a little bit more and help our community to get an even better picture of what has happened in the past 29 days, I guess, because it is September's a leap year this year. But it is interesting that a picture always tells a story of more than 1,000 words, and that really is true. Before we go on, though, you were pretty controversial last month. You had a full go at Cricket South Africa. Did you have much feedback on that? Because we tried. We asked them to respond, and there was a deathly silence.
I had lots of people from the public call me and close friends of mine, and despite all their differences in the views of their decision-making, gave me a lot of positive feedback, just trying to work out how a cricket organization can give into threats of violence and live by the values of honesty and integrity, which you know, without transparency, how can we know that they are being upholding to their own values? So I think Cricket South Africa has painted themselves in a bit of a corner. I can't understand why they're not actually just answering some simple questions. And hopefully, you know, the videos that we put out on the subject matter has just maybe put a little bit of pressure on some of the individual board members to actually think a bit more carefully on the actions of Cricket South Africa and, you know, not hide behind silence.
Yeah, and thanks for doing that, David. It can't have been easy. There is it's not a place that asset managers like to delve into. We've had over the past few weeks, we've had a number of asset managers now finally coming out and saying it's been 10 lost years for South African investors because of the poor performance of the JSE. But for the previous 9 years, nobody was saying that. It was all the JSE is going to rebound. And boy, if I could tell you, if I had a rand for every headline that said that the JSE was going to be making a lot more money for local investors in the next year, which was patently driven by marketing departments, well, I guess, you know, we'd be able to hire a lot more people at BizNews. But anyway, that's not the purpose of this conversation.
I just want to just add, though, you know, it's not like Corient or myself are taking a political view. All we've been asking for is for transparency to explain your decision-making. It doesn't seem to square. So I know it's a risky thing for a person in my position or Corient to be doing if you look at it just from the high level. But our questions have only been about just show us the information, transparent, it doesn't connect. I mean, I can't see people really having a problem with that. So, you know, on that basis, we stand by the questions we have asked.
The world has changed, David, and it's changing even more. And the old days of politicians and those in power deciding or dictating what happens in a democracy are over. And the fact that we've put the second 11 into the governing positions, and not just here, but pretty much all over the world in democracies, is something that is now seeing a reaction. So well done to you. And I applaud you, and I applaud all others in the private sector who are asking the questions and not appeasing. We know where appeasement got the world in the last 60, 70 years. But let's move on to the last month. And the last month has been really interesting again. Those who were expecting Bitcoin to fade away, and that certainly was many of the commentators were saying that this is a scam. And the late Charlie Munger, he didn't get much wrong, but he seems to have got this one wrong when he called it rat poison. They are now very quiet. Bitcoin got to another new record. But it was quite a good month overall for international stock markets. So, David, I'm going to share, as we always do, for those who are watching this video, I'm going to share now the presentation that you've put together. And as mentioned, we've added three more slides from the presentation from Kevin Links. So let's get that onto the screen now. There we go, decoding the month as we do, and this is for February. The first big headline is what happened with the international stock markets and the return in US dollars. Good month for equities.
Yes, it certainly was, Alec. International markets again performed strongly over the month. As you can see, as the graph shows, up 4.3%. For change, it was a rather broad equity market rally with emerging markets, developed markets, Europe, Japan posting all similar gains. So I guess it's nice for change that other parts of the market did so well, and it's not just driven by US mega tech for change.
However, South Africa doesn't seem to be participating again in this boom.
Yeah, it was a dreadful month for South African equities. It was like 10% behind in dollar terms. Our local market was down in dollar terms about 5.5%. One of the worst global markets for the month. And I think it was hit by two main events. Firstly, the South African market was once again impacted by the sell-off of the resources sector, which declined 7.2%, and our market is quite heavily weighted to resources. Other markets where there's a high resource component, such as Brazil and the UK, although that's slightly, maybe more energy, also underperformed, but we underperformed significantly more. So, the second reason is our rand. Our rand appreciated more than most currencies, on the back of a concerning fiscal outlook. So that made South African equities not the place to be in the month of February.
We've got the year-to-date numbers for 2024 so far, and South Africa really is lagging badly, as you say, not just against the US markets, but elsewhere for the year so far. But if you compare it with Japan, man, there's been a lot of action there. And I know that is one that a number of South African asset managers need to take a bow on. They've liked Japan for a while, and it is now suddenly starting to outperform. David, have you got any thoughts on why?
Japan's stock market has shown quite a lot of value in terms of using metrics as other markets. So a lot of value managers have been moving exposure to that region. But I think another catalyst, so you can offer value for a very long time, is there's been a lot of good rhetoric coming out of the government trying to make boards more efficient, etc., and really look to making companies who are holding a lot of cash look after shareholders a little bit better. So that plus good valuations, plus I would say a currency that hasn't done well for a significant time, and you put that together and you got a quite a pleasing investment mix.
19% gain in Japan versus 9% on the NASDAQ and minus 5% for South Africa year to date. NASDAQ performing, tech performing, and NVIDIA.
Yeah, NVIDIA's, their net income for the fourth quarter grew by, 770% year on year. A massive, massive gain. And their one-day increase in stock price was the biggest increase in market cap of all time. And that was like $247 billion gain in one day. And to put that in context, using our currency, that's about a 4.7 trillion rand gain on one day. Our collective investment scheme in South Africa is only about 3.3 trillion. So significantly higher, 30% higher. And then all the savings in South Africa in our collective investment scheme, our biggest savings pool was the gain that NVIDIA put in one day in terms of their market.
That's astonishing. And you take South Africa's GDP, which is around $400 billion. So it's more than half of our total economic activity in a year is what NVIDIA gained in market value. And looking back at the numbers, and they are spectacular numbers, but is this justified? When you look at this as an asset manager and you don't own NVIDIA, are you climbing aboard now or saying, well, I missed this one, let someone else enjoy the benefits?
Look, there's a lot of articles going out there. Are we at the repeat of the 2000, 2001 .com episode I think they are different. I think here you've got lots of earnings coming through. Well, in 2000 and 2001, you didn't. But having said that, we as a house at Corin do think that valuations of these mega caps, not all, are on the expensive side. You know, as these companies get bigger and bigger, the opportunity growth from this space becomes harder. And then in addition to that, you have the potential of antitrust regulation stepping in. So, you know, we think that the possibility of these shares outperforming going into the future is becoming less and less.
Moving on to a focus area that you've raised here about managers not liking concentrated markets. And clearly, when an NVIDIA outperforms and active managers have less NVIDIA in their portfolios than the indices do, then they're going to underperform as a result. But for them to have even the same as the indices, and I guess we've had situations in South Africa where Naspers was such a big part of the index and was continuing to outperform fantastically, but active managers underperform because they were, well, a little wary of replicating that kind of risk.
Correct. I mean, if you think about what active management is and the environment that they're facing. So the US market, for example, their top 10 stocks are about 33% of the S&P 500. That's high concentration. But the US, compared to actually other markets, developed markets, that picture is even worse in developed markets. So you've got an environment where the biggest shares have got much, much, much bigger relative to history. And if you give your money to an active manager, and active managers, you know, has a higher propensity to underweight these bigger stocks. Why? Because they're looking for a more diversified portfolio. And in the fullness of time, you can argue that small and mid caps do outperform large caps. But that certainly hasn't been the case for the last 3 years and last 10 years. So it's a particularly difficult environment for large cap managers, where active managers have a benchmark which is so heavily weighted to big stocks. So tough being an active manager at the moment, but you know, when it turns, and it often turns quite quickly, you know, you could be in a much better position going forward.
Another tough month when it comes to South Africa and cash outperformed. Just having a look at the stocks that were hit on the JSE, Sibanye-Stillwater doing worst, but resources, and then Sasol also coming under pressure. Also MTN. Do you think that had anything to do with the chief rabbi claiming that they've been naughty?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, they got a big exposure to Nigeria, and Nigeria has some macro headwinds. You know, they had a big, sharp devaluation of their currency, the Naira, against the US dollar. So that impacted MTN's Nigeria's financials. And then a big part of the investment is obviously in South Africa, and South Africa has been a region that's had little growth. So those two factors, I think, have been the driving force behind MTN's underperformance.
And Sibanye-Stillwater's been affected by the palladium price, which has been in a downward track pretty much for almost the last 2 years. Is there any upside there? Is there anything that you know about palladium that is saying, hang on, Sibanye-Stillwater might be offering value now because this could turn?
You know, these companies are heavily geared to the underlying commodities, and the basket commodity price has declined about 33% in the last year. So that's a significant fall in terms of their revenue numbers. And then you take into account which platinum companies, like Sibanye is probably a more geared platinum company than some of their peers, than Amplats or Implats. So you have a balance sheet that's probably not as sound, plus decreasing commodity prices, and then you get your share price under significant pressure. Going forward, to answer your question, I think things generally do find a bottom. You know, although there's been a big move to electric cars, there's still a need for platinum in the manufacture of other engines and for other utilities. So I'm no expert on the platinum price, But naturally, these things do tend to find a bottom. And when it turns, as I said earlier, it can turn quickly.
Yeah, and Sibanye being a big palladium producer now through its acquisition in the US of Stillwater. There was something interesting about this, David, just to put in the back of our minds. The Toyota share price has doubled because Toyota has gone a different route to many of the other car companies. They believe in hybrids, and hybrids, of course, do use platinum and palladium. So it's just well worth wondering or putting that into the back of our minds. On the good news side, a very good month for Richmont, Nepi Rockcastle, the Gold Stock, Anglo Gold Ashanti, and Rainit Investments. They were the best performers on the top 40.
I think all three of them for different reasons, but one common theme there is the Rand hedge theme playing out. So, you know, you've got a depreciating currency and you've got assets in South Africa that are a bit under pressure. And that was the fuel that really gave them a bit of catalyst to outperform.
We also had a piece during the month about rumors coming from Europe that LVMH and Richemont might find each other willing partners sometime in future. Let's see. Asset class returns as a whole, I like your tables where you go through one month, 3 months, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. You can see there, though, that property has done really badly over 5 years, but not badly in the past year. So, or even the past 3 years, a case of perhaps being oversold.
Correct. I think that's one thing that we actually got right on this program. I think 4 months ago we said that property looks cheap and it was due for a rebound. I'm only saying that because we unashamedly also admit on this program where we got things wrong. So give us that one. I think, property has rebounded, 25% plus in the last 3 months. And I think that was just a valuation play relative to, let's say, South African bonds, where you were getting high dividend yields or income yields on these property shares relative to other investments. And, if you were there at the lows, you could have got a good return.
But before we get excited, most people in South Africa, retail investors, their property investment has been actually really poor. The numbers have just come out. South African house prices have done their worst in the last 15 years, up 1.5% year on year, according to F&B, and they've got a big index to lots of data to work from. What's going on there, David? We do know that the property sector that you're following at Corian is the investable property sector, in other words, commercial, office, and industrial property. But house prices are just in such a slump.
Correct. I mean, there's lots of reasons. And you think about it in order, I would say obviously rising interest rates hasn't been good for the property sector. Debt financing costs does not go well for increased property value, property prices. But I also think it's a service delivery issue there. You in areas where property prices have been significantly impacted has been in areas where service delivery is at its weakest and municipalities are at its weakest. So people don't want to live in places where basic services aren't being rendered. And then in addition to that, you've got a economy that hasn't been growing. So the ability of people getting jobs, getting raises, puts pressure on the demand side of property. So, you're not having people who can afford houses anymore. Well, basic economics is demand and supply. If your demand is reducing, then your residential property prices are going to be under pressure.
Contrarian would say go to those areas where the property prices have fallen the most, and you can think there about eThekwini or Durban, Johannesburg. Pretoria does seem to be on the
correct. I think you've got to – I mean, we are a contrarian investment house, so generally that will be our mantra.
Yeah, that'd be it. Okay. Yeah. You're staying with it, David. You're staying with it in Johannesburg, but you can't be staying with it if you're invested in the taxi industry. My goodness, that most of the time when you invest in income funds, you do that because they're safe and you get a high yield. But now there's at least one big fund that is being exposed to the taxi industry, and they could be writing off $800 million, which means those who put money into that income fund are going to be taking a capital knock. We haven't seen that for a while.
Yeah, it's a very sad event for the industry. I don't think that the full $800 million is going to be written off. I think there is some value there, but you know, it's all very subjective at this stage. I see that the fund manager put out a notice late last week that they are repricing some of those interest instruments, and there's going to be about, on average, about a 30% knock, and that's their best estimate of value. So, you know, some income funds that did have exposure to that will be a little bit aggrieved, or the investors will be aggrieved. And I think, you know, a default event is not uncommon. If you just break it down into basic principles, you know, if you're investing in 100 companies that collectively give you a return of, let's say, 4% above the risk-free rate, then even if four of them default every year, and you, let's say you get 50% in the rand back on recovery, you're still earning a 2% above the risk-free rate return. So, you know, investors take that into account, and the name of the game there is diversification. I think a couple of the income funds that had exposure, actually their problem was not really the default, which is a problem in itself, but their weighting to that instruments was very much on the high side to what is designed to be a low-risk fund, as you said.
Good reminder, though, that there's nothing that is risk-free. Remember, talking about defaults, APSA took a big knock in Ghana not that long ago, and it hurt its share price quite badly. And let's close off with a budget. What was your thinking on the budget, which is now getting bigger and bigger in having to service debt?
Yeah, I think the South African government said the right things. They spoke about fiscal responsibility, gave the right message. Unfortunately, the cold facts are there for everyone to see. We have significant debt that's really going to hamper our growth going forward. Of, you know, every rand in revenue we get, we're spending about 20% now to finance our debt. You know, globally, you know, our peers are at about the 9% region. So it is a problem. It's something that we need to get on top of quite quickly. It's not a time for populism. It's not a time for taking on big spending that we can't actually deliver on. So it is a worry, and it's something that, you know, if we don't get a good handle on quickly, I think we're going to be poorer for it in the future.
So your wishes for the future as we sign off today?
You know, we ended our video saying, you know, may South African budget deficit narrow, and may South Africans be truly happy. And we said that because we had a little video clip of the Sona speech with lots of smiles, etc. And, you know, the theme was everything's going to be all right. But, you know, it's a bit of a leap to take unless South Africa is really on the front foot and taking some urgent and much-needed steps.
David Bracher is with Corian Capital, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.